Well, good morning, church. I said, good morning, church.
Good morning.
Yeah, there you are. There you are. Hey, if you've been with us for the past few months, you would know that we are marching through this year in which we are calling overflow. We're actually looking at these ancient practices and incorporating them into our lives in which we are looking to become more like Jesus, be transformed like him. And to use the imagery of Psalm 23, to be at a place in which our cups are actually overflowing with his goodness and his love. And so we continue the conversation today about Sabbath. And if you were to ask me, out of all those practices, which one rises to the top? Which one has transformed? Which one has changed your life more than any of the other? And which one do you practice most consistently? I would tell you it is the Sabbath practice. I'm not perfect with it, but I've gotten a lot better over the years, and it has had a huge impact on my life. But it's hard. It's hard to get into the rhythms of Sabbath practice. And if we were to look at our lives, if we were to look at Sabbath, use this guitar for a second, and we were to ask ourselves, how do our lives sound with God? I would tell you that our lives probably sound that they are just out of tune, they are not in harmony, and we are not attuned to God. And I think in and through and by the Sabbath practice, the hope is that there would be a time in which we become at this place where it is in harmony and we're moving and we're breathing and we're in sync with God. Mark Miller, look out. I'm gunning for your job. Just kidding. And so this morning, I wrote a song about Sabbath. I'm just kidding. Dude, we want people to come back to the church, not leave the church. Holy smokes. I could just see the Holy Spirit leaving when I said that. Oh, man. Ultimately, when we're talking about Sabbath, we're talking about, at the heart of it, rest. Rest from doing, rest from being, rest from striving, and ultimately resting in God. And so this morning, I want to take us back to the early chapters of Genesis. And although we'll be exploring this story, it doesn't really talk directly about Sabbath. It comes from an unlikely place. It subtly hints at this concept of rest and God's action in the midst of our rest, both in our lives and in creation. It's a story we all know well. It's a story we've heard from our childhood. But I want to provide a different lens in which we view this text. And so we find this story at the start of the sixth chapter of Genesis, and this is a story that we find. We find the story of Noah and the flood. And what I want to do is I just want to give a recap of what's actually happening in and through this story. So the Noahic story begins with the Lord seeing the wickedness of all of humanity, that the human race, their hearts have become so evil in the eyes of the Lord, and all the people of the earth, they are corrupt. They are filled with violence, and so the Lord, it says, regretted making them. There's a ton of theology behind this, so we don't have time to get in that today. But he also goes on to say that he's going to wipe away humanity and all the animals, all the birds, everything that moves on the ground, gone, destroyed. Because they're living in chaos. They're living in this place. And so if you were to describe in one word what has happened to humanity, what is that one word that has happened to them? It's disorder. They are living lives of absolute disorder. In fact, scholar and theologian John Walton, he says this about disorder. Disorder results when people decide they want to be like God. In this, they desire to make themselves the center and source of order rather than partnering with God in his order-bringing work. By in effect, they're saying, I want to do it myself. They set themselves up as an alternate center of order, and when they do so, they are cast from God's presence and sent out into the less ordered world where they will try to proceed all on their own. And this is what we do. And so within the midst of all this disorder and chaos, we have our good friend Noah. Noah has found favor with God. God sees Noah as faithful, as righteous, and he is to go build the ark because God is going to bring the floodgates to earth and destroy everything. But he promises to make a covenant with Noah. They're to bring their sons and their wives. He's to bring two of every animal, his whole family, into this ark. And after 7 days, the floodgates are just going to open. The waters come down, and it rains for 40 days and 40 nights. Can you imagine being locked in with your family for 40 days and nights of rain? I may have jumped off. I love my family, though. So they entered the ark as God has commanded, and it says something really interesting that caught my attention in the 16th verse in chapter 7. It says, "Then he shut him in." And at first, I couldn't understand why this kept pulling at me, and then after some time, after meditating on it, I realized it's the similar language used in Psalm 23 when it says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures." In both contexts, the shutting in and the laying down is forcing us into a place of rest. Why? Because we need it. God knows we need it, which is why he made the Sabbath day simply for us. And sometimes God has to force us into that rest because we don't do it. So Noah, he is shut in with the rest of his family and all the animals and all they can do. The only thing they can do is rest and wait on the Lord and what he is doing. There's no working, there's no striving, there's no building. And what's interesting is that Noah worked and he worked and he worked. And then the end of his working, what did he do? Rest. He's at a place of rest. He's shut in. He's forced to rest. But this isn't even the most striking part of the story. What's even more powerful is that if you looked at this Hebrew word, this is the Hebrew word which means Noah. And if you were to double click on the meaning of Noah's name, Noah actually means this. It means rest. And so as you look at this, you'll find that Noah is a man of rest. One of the most brilliant Old Testament theologians, my professor from Fuller, Tremper Longman, who I still talk to this day, he says this about Noah's name. He says, "Lamech named his son Noah as an expression of the hope that he would comfort us from our work and from the toil of our hands from the ground." Essentially, Noah becomes a symbol of rest. We can essentially read the story that rest built the ark. Rest moved his family into the ark only to do the only thing available to them, which is rest. Waiting on God to bring his family to an actual place of rest. And if we go back to Psalm 23, we look at when we are laid down in green pastures, God moves us to what? Quiet waters. And if we look at that Hebrew word, it's the feminine noun of Noah. It's the word menucha. Can you say that with me? Menucha. Oh, that was the worst one out of all three. I didn't mean to say that to you, but menucha. That was better. That was better. And it means waters of rest or tranquil rest. Noah, in essence, becomes a symbol maybe we never realized, which is a symbol of rest. So God lays us down in green pastures, and he leads us to rest. He shuts Noah in. But what is all of that leading to? What is God doing in the midst of this story? In the midst of this story, amidst Noah's rest, God is moving humanity from disorder to an actual place of order. God is moving humanity from disorder to a place of order. I mean, think about our own lives. In our own line, God moves us from disorder, from chaos, to brokenness, from disharmony, lives out of tune. And in and through the Sabbath rest, he moves us to a place of restoration and renewal. And what this does in turn is it allows us to be a people that work really hard, 5 or 6 days a week, with our cups overflowing with God's goodness and his love and his peace. And in turn, we are better parents. We are better spouses. We are better sons and daughters and grandparents, all of this. And all that points to what God is doing in the Noahic story and in our lives, that in and through the Sabbath rest, he's not only restoring us, he's not only renewing us, but he's moving us to a place in which we are meant to flourish. That we are meant to flourish. This is what he does with us. He's moving us in our Sabbath rest from disorder to a place of menucha. Waters of rest, lives that are flourishing. This is why we need Sabbath, and this is what you see in the ministry of Jesus. If you go back to Mark's gospel in chapter 3, Jesus encounters a man with a shriveled hand. And he says to the man, and this all takes place on the Sabbath day, he says for the man to stretch out his hand. And the man stretches out his hand, he heals his hand, but the word that is used in that text is that he restored the man's hand. He restored him. He took this man on the Sabbath day. He restored him. He renewed him so that he would be and go to a place in which he is now flourishing. And this restoration, this renewal, it doesn't just affect us. It affects all of creation. How many of you have ever heard the term fallow soil or fallow ground? Yeah. It's this idea that you do not touch ground or that you're working. You let the soil just be. This can be rotation of crops, and you either leave it for a year or even up to 5 years. And what they're finding through studies is that what happens in the soil is that the nutrients begin to regenerate. And the outcome of that, the product of that, is that there's a higher yield within that crop because it's had time to rest and regenerate. Rest is needed. And it's built into the fabric of creation. And when we Sabbath, God is not only restoring us, he's renewing us, which leads to this place in which we actually are flourishing. And do you know what the opposite of Sabbath is? Do you know what it is? It's this place on the weekends. Yeah. Think about the concept of Costco. You drive into that parking lot going 1,000 miles an hour, right? This is the place that turns the nicest Christians and the worst people on planet Earth. And you're coming in, and you're looking for that spot, and you're going 1,000,000 miles an hour. And you're weaving, and you're dodging, and sometimes you're in that standoff to get that spot. And no one's budging. But then you get it. And then you're walking up to the carts. And now it's a mad dash to see who's going to get that cart that's the nicest one. Not the one with Kleenex or trash in it, the nice one. You know what I'm talking about. You get the cart, then you pull out your VIP card to let you into the club, right? Scan, you're in. And then what's the first thing you're confronted with? The temptation to buy that discounted TV. And then you buy the TV, which means you got to work even harder and strive harder. And then you're getting in the main corridor, the fast lane, in which I call it, where you're weaving and you're dodging and you're shoving little old ladies out of the way. So why? So you can get to the strawberries before anybody else does. Because the Lord knows your kids won't eat the bad strawberries. Is that just my house? Okay. And then we haven't even got to the tempters, the ones that say to you, would you like a free sample? You bet I want a free sample. It's free. Then you buy the popcorn, which means now you got to work hard to pay for the popcorn. And then you come to the last leg where for the Lord knows why, but you got to pull out your card one more time because apparently the first one didn't work. Then they scan you. And if you are wise and you are brilliant like my wife, you'll have ordered pizza before this awful experience and it will be ready for you at the exit. And then you have one last leg. You got to pass the IRS auditor at the very end to make sure everything is on your cart. Isn't this the lives we're living, though? That without Sabbath, we're living at a pace as if we're at Costco 7 days a week without any rest. And the product of living like that, statistically, we're dying. And more importantly, we're actually becoming spiritually bankrupt because of our lack of Sabbath rest. We're not flourishing in the way God desires us to. And if you love Costco, that was a horrible illustration for you. We need to take Sabbath rest seriously for the restoration and renewal of our souls. But there's more going on this topic of Sabbath. And we need to turn to Hebrews chapter 4 to see this, which begins by saying, therefore, since the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us be careful that none of you be found to have fallen short of it. For we also have had the good news proclaimed to us, just as they did. But the message they heard was of no value to them because they did not share the faith of those who obeyed. Now we who have believed, we enter that rest just as God said, though I declared an oath in my anger that they shall never enter my rest. And yet his works have been finished since the creation of the world, for somewhere he has spoken about the seventh day in these words. On the seventh day, God had rested from all his work. And again, in the passage above, it says, they shall never enter my rest. Therefore, since it still remains for some to enter that rest, and since those who are formerly had the good news proclaimed to them did not go in because of their disobedience, God again set a certain day, calling it today.
This he did when a long time later he spoke through David, as in the passage already quoted. Today, if you hear his voice, don't harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God wouldn't have spoken later about another day. There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. In this dense and in this complicated passage, there's several points the author is trying to make, but I just want to highlight a couple of them. First, he's making the point that an entire generation didn't enter the rest available to them because of their disobedience and their faithlessness. And the rest he's referring to, it is twofold. It's the entering the promised land of Canaan, whereby they would no longer be wandering in the wilderness, but they would come to a place in which they could rest and they could dwell permanently. The other part is that he's referring to a future salvific rest for God's people. In other words, if you are a follower of Jesus, this peace and this rest, it's available to you. As one theologian says, to enter into rest means to enter into fellowship with God himself and to share in the restful state that he enjoys, essentially delighting in him. Believers already have this in process, entering into that rest. But the question you and I need to ask ourselves is, are we being obedient and are we being faithful to entering into that rest with him? Are we resting in him? And so the author goes on to make a second point. He says that the rest you experience is only available from God by being faithful to resting in him. And he's trying to tell you and I that that rest, it's available to you and I here and now today. In other words, we don't have to keep living the lives that we're living because he's offering a rest that's available to each one of us, which means you don't need to go on vacation to experience this type of rest and this peace. And I believe when we Sabbath, when we rest in him, our lives will look more in tune and in harmony with him, essentially living into that abundant life that John 10:10 talks about. Marva Dawn, in her book, Holy Sabbath, great book to read, she says this relative to our ordered lives. She says, when we order our lives around the focus of our relationship with God by letting our Sabbath day be the highlight of our week, toward which everything moves and from which everything comes, then the security of God's presence in that day will pervade our week. In other words, it will overflow into our week. The Sabbath day is more than just a day. It's actually a way of being in the world. It's a spirit of restfulness from living into the Father's presence and his love all for one day in which it's to overflow into our week. This is why some scholars would argue that the Jews have been able to withstand all that they have for generations because they actually practice the Sabbath day. It's a way of being in the world, enduring it, and flourishing in the midst of trial and hardship. I've shared with many of you before that each summer I would take approximately 80 high school students and college students to the Grand Canyon for this massive hike we would do. It's a 14-hour drive. We would go to the top, we'd eat watermelon and have water to hydrate for the big hike ahead. And then the whole journey started with these bad boys. These are known as the switchbacks, 3/4 mile of just straight vertical down into the canyon. And what the students would often forget is we actually had to go back up those on the way out, which is the best part. Kids are dropping like flies, it's great. And you get to the end of the switchbacks and you get to this part where you think it's smooth sailing for 12 miles, but you realize you're in soft sand. And with soft sand, it's a low, arduous trek and you're just marching through slowly. And toward the end of the 12 miles, you get to this place where you are just ready to give up. The blisters have kicked in and you're ready to throw in the towel. But then you start to hear the rush of water, sound of water. At the very last leg, when you are ready to just be done and say, I quit, you see this. Amazing, beautiful place. And what's most special is that in the days we're down there, there is no striving. There is no working. There's just preparing meals and simply being. We're jumping off waterfalls. We're laughing together. We're encouraging students to jump off waterfalls. We're baptizing. Yours truly is owning every student at the game of hearts. There's no mercy. There is no grace for them. I'm just winning. It's awesome. In fact, this is the last picture we took of our trip. And if you look closely, there's nothing but peace and joy, celebration and laughter. It's amazing. And what I preach to the students over and over again is exactly what the author of Hebrews is getting at, reminding them that the peace and the rest and the flourishing that they're experiencing in Supai, that it's available to them when they get home. They just need to Sabbath better. The other thing I kept preaching to them, which the author of Hebrews is trying to drive home, is that what they're experiencing in Supai, what they experience in this incredible place, and I would argue what we experience in Rutledge, what we experience on women's retreats or men's retreats, is that within all these experiences, what you and I are actually experiencing is a foretaste of what is to come. It's a foretaste of what is to come. Sabbath is a foretaste of what is to come. And this rest is available. It's not just a present reality. It's a future expectation. That one day, all the disorder, all the chaos, all the striving, all the longing, it ceases because we will be with Him, experience eternal peace, eternal rest, permanent menuha. You don't need a vacation to get that rest. It's available now, so rest in Him. Delight in Him. Experience what is to come. And I wonder if we practice this more and more, that we would be more ready for heaven. We'd be more okay with dying because we are tasting the goodness of what is to come, and we cannot wait for that goodness to come in all its fullness. That's powerful. So what would help us as a family move forward and Sabbath better? I had emailed this guy about 3 weeks ago. This is Rabbi Josh Heller. He's a rabbi at a synagogue near my house. And I said, I would love to talk to you about Sabbath from a Jewish perspective. He goes, nobody ever wants to talk about this stuff. I said, well, I'm your guy. So we sat down as a couple of theologians and he starts talking about the Sabbath. And we come to this place in his synagogue, and he pulls out the scroll, and he goes, would you like me to read it in Hebrew? I said, I would love for you to do that. So he begins the reading in Hebrew, and he goes, you will never guess what I turned to. And I said, what is it? He goes, this whole section is about Shabbat. It's about the Sabbath. He goes, I cannot believe I just turned to that. I said, well, it means I'm on the right path here then. And we got to talking. It was a great conversation, and at the end of it, there's some things that stood out to me with, I had you all in mind as he was sharing this. He said, he was referring to two texts in the Old Testament. He was referring to Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 through 14. And then he was referring to Exodus 28. And he said, in Deuteronomy, it says that we are to keep the Sabbath day holy. And that word keep is the Hebrew word shamor. And he said that shamor means what you do not do on the Sabbath. In other words, it's what you eliminate. It's what you take out. It's what you rearrange in your life to actually practice and have a Sabbath day. In other words, there's a focus on identifying those things that need to be taken out so you can essentially keep and practice and shamor on the Sabbath day. And he described in Jewish tradition that they believe that the soul contracts on keeping the Sabbath, and that's meant to make room for it to actually expand and receive all the goodness on the Sabbath. And then he went on to say that the Exodus verse, it says that we're to remember the Sabbath. It's a little bit slightly different, and he said that word remember is the Hebrew word zahor. And he said it's all the positive things that you experience on the Sabbath, from lighting a candle to feeling that sense of renewal and restoration. And he said in his congregation that people don't Sabbath well because all they do is zahor. They have not prepared for the Sabbath because the rest of their life is still happening. The phone's still going off. The emails are still coming in. It's still happening. They haven't prepared to slow down. They need to shamor better. So how do we Sabbath well? Well, we shamor, we keep the Sabbath holy by eliminating, removing, rearranging our lives so that we can actually Sabbath. So what this means is if Sunday is the best day for you to Sabbath, but it's the day you actually do all your errands and shopping, shoot, do your shopping on Thursday or Friday or Saturday. If your kids are in like five leagues and one of those leagues falls on Sunday, cancel that league, get them out of that league. And I promise you, your kid's not going pro. It's okay. Get them out. This is possible. I just think we need to stop coming up with excuses and prioritize our lives and so that we deem what is important. And that can mean eliminating some activities and sports and things that you really like. So eliminate, prioritize, rearrange, no excuses. And lastly, keep zohor. Keep practicing consistently. Keep trying, keep attempting. Start at 5 hours, continue to go up to 24. I want to close with how I share the Sabbath day. I'm typically busy on Sundays, so that's not the best day. And so I will Sabbath on Fridays. I'll go to the Chattahoochee River. And at the Chattahoochee, I'll go walking up into the trails and I'll hike up there. And what I've noticed is that if I've had a busy week where I've had zero rest in the Lord, zero of that time, that it takes me usually, and I'll clock this, it takes me 30 to 40 minutes before I actually will slow down and feel the rest of God begin to set in. It takes a long time. There was one Sabbath where I was walking, and this was when the leaves were changing. And so I came on this upon this tree, and this tree was bright yellow. And I just sat there under this tree like this with the leaves, just looking at the leaves. And in this moment, it reminded me of my childhood in my grandmother's backyard where she had the same color leaves all around. This is where I'd build all my forts back there. And as I sat there under those leaves, and it reminded me of my grandmother's love for me. I just remembered my grandmother's love. And that cascaded into remembering and being reminded of the Father's love for me. And you know what was happening in that moment? Zohor. My cup was beginning to overflow with God's goodness and His peace and His love. It's available to us. And so I finished my hike, got in my car, I went home, waited for my family to get home from school. And you know what happened when they got home from school? They were a hot mess, a mess. Something happened at work. My wife's in a certain mood. My daughter's having a rough time. My son's having a rough go. And you know who was available to them? Me. I was able to pour out. I was able to love them. Why? Because I shamored. I kept the Sabbath. I experienced that zohor. I was being restored and renewed. And you know what that led to that day? That is a day of flourishing because of practicing the Sabbath. Do you see how powerful the Sabbath day is and can be in our lives? So I invite you into this incredible gift of the Sabbath, having our souls renewed and restored so that we can take on the other six other days of the week with our cups overflowing. We were never meant to master the universe or our lives or even our schedules. So take the words of Hebrews seriously. Make every effort to enter that rest. And take to heart the words of St. Augustine when he says this: "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." Would you pray with me? Lord, we thank you for the incredible gift of the Sabbath. We thank you for the ways in which it restores us and it renews us and it moves us to a place of flourishing. We thank you that you are a good, good Father who gives good, good gifts to your children in which we don't deserve. And so help us to take this practice seriously so that we can be a people changed and renewed by you, overflowing with your goodness, so that we might be a better people to bring your kingdom. We ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen.